A Conversation Between Reverend Richard A. Rehm and Gord Van Hoven, and A Sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rehm, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on May 7, 1989, entitled The Christ Community Experiment. The text for the sermon is Ephesians 1, verses 18 through 20. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
I didn't know whether to bring a stool or a rocking chair. I was just thinking about the last time I had the privilege of putting the microphone in your face. Yeah, I thought about that too. I think I came busting into your office one day and you were on direction, and I didn't realize it. And he said to me, oh, here comes Gord, my colleague. Gord, why don't you come on over, and let me ask you a question. And people would like to hear about your ministry of evangelism. And he asked me this question, and I looked at that mic, and I thought about the 9,000 homes that this was going into and the 18,000 eyes that were staring at me, and nothing came out. And Dick said to me, let me rephrase the question for you. And he did, and same thing happened. So I don't know, you're taking quite a risk here this morning. I'm exhilarated, but I'm scared.
Well, it's been almost 18 years, a little longer for me, just slightly less for Gord, a matter of a couple months, that we have been in ministry together at Christ Community. And I think it's probably somewhat of a record, about as long as any team ministry has lasted that I'm aware of. And so it's a wonderful thing this morning to be able to celebrate that together. And I think probably, Gord, my first question was, how are you feeling right now? But I think probably you've answered that. What have you been thinking about as you worried about this moment, you know, and now here it is?
I haven't worried about it.
You haven't worried about it. I'm glad.
That's the first untruth.
Remember that you're not behind the pulpit, but this is in sort of you know, the ministry of the Word of God, so you ought try to be honest.
Well, I've been thinking about our years together here. There was a couple of moments this morning when I looked up and saw my grandchildren up in the balcony that I... There was a real gush of something happening to me, and I just kind of collapsed. I thought, boy, quite a church. And a lot has happened here in 18 years. It's been a real privilege to be a part of this ministry.
I think that most of the congregation know you well, not quite as well as I do, but... they probably suspect that the very fact that you don't let yourself get in situations like this very often is that you do feel so deeply. You're just kind of a big teddy bear, and one of the things that scares you most is letting that out and getting out of control.
I don't like to be in positions like this, where I don't know what you're going to ask me.
Well, probably we ought to move to that 18 years of ministry together. Your focus over all these years has changed somewhat, but one consistent focus has been outreach, Gord. And as you reflected on the people you've shepherded in here, I'm sure that you've come to be amazed yourself at the numbers, and then I'd like to ask you to just speak about the thing that's been most important to you as you have reached out on behalf of this people.
Okay. Well, one of the joys of the ministry has been the privilege of having the opportunity to reach out to people in this community with the love of Jesus Christ. Over 4,000 people have come into this church. I don't know if you realize that, but we have shepherded in 4,000 people. There are some that leave for different reasons, but that's a large number of people, and I've had the privilege of hearing their testimonies, of listening to them share their spiritual journeys, and giving the reasons as why they come into Christ Community Church. The worship is great. This is something that's always mentioned. The preaching is terrific. The choir is fantastic. And this morning they were just glorious. And the people are exciting and happy. And these are all reasons why that people give for coming into this church. But I think the one reason that stands above all is our position on grace, the tone quality of grace, the unconditional love and acceptance of people right where they are. This church has, as I look out into this audience here, I see many people that have come into the church, and I know that they have come here because they have not been judged. We have not, regardless of the history that they have brought into this church, we have not looked at that. We have just said, we love you, we accept you, we believe in you, and you're welcome to Christ Community Church. And without that kind of tone quality, without the opportunity to minister to people like that, I don't think we could never have had this many people come into our church and have the opportunity to work with them.
Lord, I remember many times that you would come to me and say, you know, this is the situation, and how do you think the elders will react, particularly in our early years?
I know. Well, I think early in our ministry, we had to ask the elders if we could marry someone. You know, you had to get permission from the elders. And your coming, actually what happened, Dick, is the fact that you came into this church, and when you came back the second time, you know, this is exactly what happened to you. I mean, you came back, as you say, your life was shattered, you were broken in every respect, you had no family, no self-respect, the only thing you had were the clothes on your back and a toothbrush.
And the clothes weren't too good.
And this congregation, instead of lecturing and moralizing and pointing their finger at you, they reached out and they embraced you and loved you. And nursed you back to wholeness, and you've really become a model for what we have tried to do for people here. Now, if they did that for you, obviously they couldn't say no to all of these people who keep coming through our doors. And that's been your message. You know, when you were first here, the first time, I went into the ministry under your preaching.
You sure you want to go back this far?
I don't know if I should. The church certainly didn't grow in those 4 years.
Right.
But I can remember you banging the pulpit, you know, very angrily because of the commitment, the lack of commitment in this church. And you were a John the Baptist. Every Sunday it was repent or perish. And if you didn't shape up,
ship out.
Yeah, ship out. And then
most of these people, I bet they can't hardly believe that, Gord.
No, I know. Maybe not. Some of them can. They sit in the back row back there. Some of your old people. Well, then what happened to you rubbed off, and you came back, and I think you learned a lot over there in Europe, and coming back and so forth, you realized that people didn't have to be told they're going to hell, because many of them are living in hell week after week. And so the message that you gave them was not a message of condemnation, the fact that people are sinners, we know that. But you told them they're beautiful people, made in the image of God, and they've got a tremendous potential, a strength of character, an inner beauty. And if they could only get their life in the right relationship with God, He'd bring the best out of them and make their life beautiful. And this is the message that people need to hear, they want to hear. And this is the message that continues to bring people into this congregation, a message of unconditional love and acceptance. We took a risk with you, this congregation did, and trusted the process. And that's what we do with people. We take a risk with everyone that comes in here, and we just love them and embrace them and accept them and trust that the process will bring them to a closer relationship to Jesus.
You went into the ministry under John the Baptist, and you've served more in the model of Jesus. Was that a kind of natural transition for you? I can remember the night that Dick and Catherine Kreisinger, that we talked through the night and talked about whether you could come and we could join together. What did you think when you came at that time? Did you ever have anything like this in mind?
No, it was... You told me if I came up here, I would do all the running and you'd do all the preaching and teaching. and that's the way it worked, and I never thought we'd ever get out of that little place over there, which is now the Parlor. I just expected that we'd have a good ministry together. I didn't realize it was going to last this long, but it's kind of like a marriage. You know, we've just done great. Had our ups and downs, but I don't think we've ever had a fight, have we?
Nope. That's because I don't fight. No, I think that for a relationship to make it and to last, it hinges on the person who is not always in the limelight. The credit really goes to Gordon, who has been, well, no one could possibly ever have such a supportive partner in ministry. And I know that I have not yet really begun to face up to the 29th of July, which date is significant, Gordon. Why?
It's my birthday.
And
I'm going to retire.
Can you believe it? Well, I do believe it, but I know that it will impact me in ways that I have not yet discovered. But Gord, with you coming to the conclusion of what has been a beautiful, beautiful ministry in the midst of a people that love you dearly, you have also had to play the administrator, because no one has ever accused me of having any administrative skills. I mean, you love to tell the story of how when I came back here there was $10,000 in the bank, and after a few short years there was $1 million in debt. And I tend to give the store away. I always give the shop away. But you have had to wrestle with that administrative role. You've tried to keep us afloat. How about that? Can this congregation survive by grace, Gordon?
You say the verdict is still out, but I know that a lot of people look at this church and think that we've got it all together. And we are a great church. We're the third largest Reformed church in America. And a lot of wonderful things have happened here in this church. It's been working. We have survived by grace. I don't see why we can't go on surviving. Look what happened. Like you said, when you came back, we did have $3,000 in the building fund, and we were debt free. And we built this church. We didn't have to, but we were worshiping in the other sanctuary, and the attendance was skyrocketing. We had one, two, and then three services. We could have continued there, but we wanted to expand our ministry to reach more people, because this is a church that cares, and we did. But in the meantime, we accrued a debt of $996,000. And we didn't have an organ. We didn't have a education facility downstairs, an air conditioner, an elevator. All of these things.
Those were all extra.
They're all extra over and above that we had, and we survived by grace, they were paid for. And then people said, hey, we need a nursery. We had a little 14 by 14 room that people were bringing their children to, and they said, if you don't do something about it, we're going to go to another church. And we heard them, and we did something about it. But it cost us $100,000, including the new kitchen that we put in there, and then we had to fix our parlor up so that people could be a part of that. And so that, again, we did it. We survived by grace. Right?
Right.
And then we went down. Did I talk about the basement?
Well, you mentioned it, but well, you mentioned we did it, but not how we did it.
Well, we did it.
But it was a cash only thing.
Cash only. We built a parking lot out here, and now we need to expand our office facility and have more educational rooms and conference rooms. We're operating out of a building that is 30 years old and was made for Sunday school. And so with all of the things that we have, we have to do something about it, and we're going to have to do it by grace alone. The verdict isn't out, but I'm sure that we can do it.
Lord, we should be honest with the people. Right now, we haven't got it all together, have we?
Well, one of our weaknesses, I hate to talk about weaknesses, but one of our weaknesses is that we don't have enough people who have ownership in this whole thing. I feel like 5% of the monies that we receive, 5% of the people give 40% of the money. 5%. There are about 55% give 50% of the money. So we've got a good group in the middle there, but we have a large group that give very little. Now, you know, either these people, you know, a lot, like when you came back, you had the shirt on your back, and that's about it. And that's what happens with a lot of people that come into this community. They're trying to get it together. They can barely eke out an existence. And so we need those angels in the 5% bracket who can help us to bring these people in so that we can nurture them, you know.
But I think, Gord, also a lot of the people who've come in have had bad church experiences, maybe some years ago.
That's right.
And for all that has been accomplished here, and for the hundreds of thousands of dollars that have been contributed, we have not been high pressure. In fact, as you will attest, the consistory has often had to get after me to bring the financial situation to the people, which I do with.
And which you will soon be meeting with the finance committee in your new position.
he's given me his job, and frankly, Tuesday night I will meet with the finance committee for the first time in all these many years, because the joke at consistory is I can't even read the financial report. But I can't afford that luxury anymore, because it will be now my responsibility. And I must say to you that you will get a letter from me this week, which will tell you that if we don't have a significant next 2 months, we will have a significant shortfall in our operating budget for the first time in a long time. I think there are some extenuating circumstances. Last year we had the PIP, the fastest prologue, and there was a wonderful response, and there has been. But special gifts have shifted into that fund, and so we're significantly down in special gifts. Maybe some of the basket offering got siphoned off there too. We had two holidays at the end of the year. Christmas and New Year's were on Sunday. That's bad for us. We don't have our traditional crowd, and our year-end giving didn't do for us what we needed this year. So around the 1st of January, those who can read the financial reports began to see some trouble looming. And when I got serious about this guy going, I thought at least I would have some dollars to replace him with. And then I found out that the Finance Committee was saying to me, no. Now, Gordon and I have talked about it, and he says, just tell the people. So I'm going to write you a letter, and I'm going to tell you that we are going to need an over and above special push in the next 2 months. One of the things we're concerned about, frankly, is four of those Sundays, I'm gone. We have excellent services. We have specially planned and programmed those weeks, and they'll be great. But the tendency is, which is rather normal, attendance is down a little bit, offerings are down a little bit. When I went on sabbatical, somebody said, what do you hope will happen to the church? I said, well, I hope everything tails down just a little. Because I hope you miss me. But not too much. Because then, too much rides on me. So, Gord, right now, are we going to make it by June 30?
We're going to make it. We've always been in, for 18 years, and strained ourselves financially. We've always been struggling. This congregation has never let us down, and they aren't going to let us down now. We've got a good thing going here, and it's worth giving to, and that's the reason.
We have been scrambling for 18 years, haven't we?
We have.
I don't think the people know.
We have. We've robbed from Peter to pay Paul. We've scratched in every little corner we can in order to keep this thing afloat at times. I mean, it looks like we've got it all together. And I said the thing that we need is for more people to take over the ownership of this church. Like Dawn said, when she, in her prayer, she said, our church, you know, this church, and then she said, our church. And that's the movement that we have to see in the lives of the people. Instead of talking about Dick and Gord's church or that church, it's our church, my church. And we have to merchandise this church better to the community as to what's really going on here, so that people know that we're doing a good thing. And we have to do that to our own people, too. We have to do a better job of merchandising what we're doing.
Gord, as you come to the end of a phase, you still got dreams.
Oh, yeah.
You want to name a couple dreams?
Well, if you don't have dreams, you're dead. You've got to have dreams. And I've got dreams, but, you know, I'm going to have those dreams right to the last day that I'm here, but I think my dream is to continue to evangelize this community. We've had a 9% increase average here of in our church for 18 years, and if we can, I figure if we just gain 4% to the year 2000, we'll have 5,300 people in this church. 5,300. So we're going to have to think about that. And we need to evangelize not only the community, but the people within this community need to be evangelized. There's some of them that are on the fringe that we have to bring in. We have to do the same with our children. We've got a big job with youth. You realize that we have, last year we baptized 77 children. We have averaged 60 children baptized in the last 12 years. 720 children have been baptized here in the last 12 years.
How many?
720.
In the last 12 years?
12 years. Fantastic number of people. And think of all the families that have come in with young children. So, I mean, we have a big job here ahead of us to evangelize the children. And to another dream of mine is I think we have to be more sensitive to social issues. And as Peter's words, global awareness, hunger, homeless, peace, justice, all of these things are things that people are concerned about, and we have to address them. And I'm excited about the property that we're picking up to the east. I mean, a lot of people say, what are you going to do, tear all those houses? No, we're not going to tear them down. My dream is that we would have a campus-style ministry over there. Each one of those homes, a ministry. Daycare, family center, something for the homeless. Those are places that we can continue our ministry, expanding out that way. But, you know, it takes people, takes money, all of these things. I think people are, if we can merchandise all that, and the people get excited about it, and we bring them on board, you know, that's the challenge that I leave for you, brother.
I had lunch 3-4 weeks ago when I was in New York City with Ari Brower, who preached our dedicatory sermon. He's a good friend of mine and was a classmate, and he's the head of the National Council of Churches. And in the whole country. And if you have read anything about the National Council, you know that Ari has been in deep trouble. There is an old ecumenical organization whose structures are being stretched and are no longer flexible to meet today's need. And so he has challenged the structures of the National Council of Churches. And when you do that, you challenge vested interests. And so it has really been tough for Ari. Well, he called me a couple months ago and he said, I just wondered how you're doing. He knew that it hasn't been such an easy year for me either. And so I said, well, the best thing I can say is whatever I'd done, I would do it again. He said, good for you. Eventually we got around to his situation. And he said, I smiled when you said you'd do it again, because I would do it again too. He said, I went on vacation. I realized what the situation was. I knew what the challenges were. I had three options. Either I could leave, just run away. But he said, I can't do that. Or I could figure another 10 years of outmaneuvering the rest of them. Then I could probably outmaneuver them, but life's too short for that kind of ministry. So he said, I decided I would roll the dice. Well, when he said that, that image became important to me. And you know, you may forsake me, but by God's grace, I'm ready to roll the dice one more time. I am ready to say, you see, because I do have to choose either to lead this flock into the comfort zone and begin myself to plan my retirement, or to let it go one more time. Now, don't hold me to one more. Because I am not going to retire when I should. When I see little clusters of people out in the parking lot saying, I wonder how long this can go on. I hope somebody will lead me away. But I am ready to throw the dice one more time. Now you say, that's a gambling image for the church. No, it's from the book of Proverbs. Man throws the dice, but God makes the spots turn up. There.
That's actually in there?
That's actually in there. And in 18 years, you've never asked me that question before. Well, this is Ascension Sunday. Jesus Christ is Lord. The church is the fullness of his body on earth. Paul's prayer, that magnificent prayer, a pastor for his people, that you might know the hope to which you are called, the marvelous heritage that you share with all the saints, and the power available to you, power which is demonstrated in the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead when God caused him to sit in heavenly places, enthroned him in power. Jesus Christ is Lord. Jesus Christ is Lord. That's the Ascension Day message. That's the truth and the reality. Jesus, the resurrected Christ, reigning now, whose Spirit is with us as we celebrate next Sunday. That's the reality of the church. And so, it's no gamble. Now I'm ready. Are you ready? Because the verdict is still out. Will this church not only survive, but thrive and prosper by grace alone? I believe it will.